Okay, now we begin. Good morning, everyone. Great to see everybody. We finished Sefer Shoftim last week. We're going to begin Shmuel soon. I thought in the weeks leading up to Tisha B'Av, we'll take some time now to learn a Megillah that I think is the least learned, maybe Koheles, actually. It's debatable which one's the least learned out of the two, Megillah or Koheles or Eicha. But it's hard to take time to learn the Megillah. It's, I would say, from an emotional perspective, the tune of Eicha is very haunting. It's like in our heads, right? I think as we begin the 9 days this week, it's like Eicha Yeshva. It's just there, and that is like the, you know, emotional way to connect to the Megillah itself. But if you take time to learn practically the Megillah, the Psukim, understand them in a deeper way. And once Tisha B'Av's over, it's like, I don't want to look at this, right? Forget about it. Because really, that's a real response. In Europe, they say, Rivka, you just mentioned like the paper Eichas. So yeah, we have the paper Eichas. And in Europe, they would throw them out. They would put them at the Shemos every year after Tisha B'Av. I don't need it next year. I don't need it. Okay, right? I don't need it. So it's a beautiful thought.
Put it outside.
What? I'm surprised.
We are outside, yes. So it's a beautiful thought. Imagine if there was like a Shemos bin right outside, you know, Motzei Tisha B'Av, and everyone just takes their kinos, and we don't need them. Okay, so the shul spends a few dollars. Maybe that hashkafa shabo is appropriate. So we don't spend the year learning it because who wants to learn it? You want to forget about it, but learn it nonetheless. We should. We should know where we're going to be reading on Tisha B'Av. We shouldn't have a Tisha B'Av. From that perspective, we shouldn't have a Tisha B'Av. We should be hopeful and hold out, even to the last second, that Tisha B'Av this year will not happen, or it will happen, but it'll be a simcha we'll be celebrating in Yerushalayim. So Megillas Eicha, anyone know who wrote the Megillah? Eicha was written by Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Yirmiyahu really depicts the time period that we're in many ways. Yirmiyahu was, they call him the prophet of doom. He was the one that gave the nevuos to the Jewish people, told them straight, if you don't shape up, Beis Hamikdash will be destroyed. Yeshayahu is called the prophet of Nechama, right? The two of them were like good kapeka, but he was this individual. Yirmiyahu himself was thrown into jail. He wasn't taken seriously by most people. Who wants to hear that you're doing something wrong? Who wants to hear that if the people of Shomrei Torah don't shape up, God is going to come down and have enemies come in and destroy the temple? No one, destroy our shul. No one wants to hear that. So the people of the time of, you know, the time of instruction of Beis Hamikdash didn't want to hear that. They threw him into a pit. They had people go against him, Nevi'e Sheker, who testified against him and said, God came to me also and said, we're fine. Don't worry about us. We spoke about this a few weeks ago in Shul. How do you determine who's in the Navi MS and who's in Navi Sheker? I'm an average guy. I'm an average gal who's living during this time. How do I know? How do I discern if this person is right or wrong? They both claim that they speak to God. I didn't witness either of them speak to God. How do I know? That's a fair question. The Radak writes that a Navi MS will never say everything will be good. They'll say everything will be good if you behave, right? If you speak nicely, if you, etc. But another MS is never going to see. So that's the way they should have known back then. But to the extent that Rashi tells us that Megillas Eicha is already referenced in Sefer Malachim Beis, Yehoyakim HaMelech took a scroll and burnt it in the fire. Why did he burn it? We don't want to believe it. Rashi tells us the first comment of Rashi on Megillas Eicha is that Eicha is the scroll that Jehoiakim burnt. He burnt it because they didn't want to believe. They didn't want to believe. And what does that mean also? And he wrote this before the Beis Hamikdash was being destroyed.
This is the first or the second?
Number one, temple number one. Temple number one, temple number one. So that is first one. So Yirmiyahu wrote it. Yirmiyahu wrote three Sfarim. Sifro, he wrote the book of Jeremiah, wrote Yirmiyahu. He also wrote Malachim, and he wrote the book of Kings. The Medrash tells us that they all three are different ways to connect to the destruction or the Beis Hamikdash in general and the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. Malachim Beis was a history. The facts on the ground, what happened. Yirmiyahu, the book of Yirmiyahu, is like the theological way to connect to understanding destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. And the book of Eicha is the emotional response. I have to just add most of the sources that I'm going to, or the ideas I'm going to share today, are from this amazing book by Rabbi Dr. Yael Ziegler, who is, this came out from Koren last year. It took her 7 years to write it. There was a podcast last year that I listened to recently on her book that she presented. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So that's point number one. Yirmiyahu, three Sfarim. Eicha is the emotional response. Look at Eicha, and what do you notice? Just look at the beginning of all the psukim in Eicha. If you're just getting on right now, please take out a Megillas Eicha. It will definitely help you. Yeah, what do you notice? Aleph Beis, right? Aleph Beis. So if you notice, the first chapter is 22 psukim, because there are 22 letters in the Aleph Beis. What about chapter 2? Chapter 2, same. Right? Chapter 3 is 66. It's the Aleph Beis times 3. Good. Chapter 4 is back to normal. Sorry, chapter 4 is back to it. No, chapter 4 is 22. Psukim, same. And then chapter 5 is not that way. So the first four chapters are written in Aleph Beis form. Chapter 3 is written a little bit differently. The first chapter, it begins the word Eicha. The second chapter. Yeah, 1 second. Yeah. Chapter 2 begins the word Eicha. Chapter 3 begins the word Ani HaGever. And chapter 4 begins the word Eicha again. Chapter 3 is very different, fundamentally. It's a big discussion about who it's about. Chapter 3 begins the words, Ani HaGever, I am the man. Most assume that this is written by Yirmiyahu, and it's a firsthand account of him describing what happened during the time of the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. The other three or four chapters, chapter 5 might be a little bit different, but at least the other three are written more from a reflective point of view. Either it's a great literary device. It's either Yushalayim talking, right? Yushalayim or the Beis Hamikdash talking, or it's an author speaking about Yushalayim, speaking about what happened, but it's in third person. The third chapter is in first person. Therefore, it's a little bit different. You'll notice that even though chapter 3 is 66 psukim, is just as long as the other psukim, just as long as the other chapters, because the psukim here are very rich and longer, with more words, just very practically, versus chapter 3. The emphasis from a chiastic structure, we have, right, A, B, C, B, A, the middle is really like the focus and the emphasis. And that is on chapter 3, that it could be that it's the most intense. It could be it's in first person. Therefore, it is the most different. And maybe that's why it is straight up there. So let's begin. Let's begin looking on inside. and we're learning together. Do you have any thoughts? So if we're learning about Eicha, emotional response to the structure of the Beis HaMikdash, what would you expect to be there? What do you want to hear? Like, what would, if you were writing this book, right, and you were there and you experienced it, or you're a prophet and you're going to experience it, and you're telling the people what's going to happen, what do you expect to be written in this Megillah?
Why
it happened. Great. Why it happened. Great point, Nathan. Let's see if that's going to be addressed in the book, why it happened. Good.
What do we have to do?
What
do we have to do to get everything back?
What do we have to do to pick the pieces up? Yeah. Right? Humpty Dumpty, right? The base image was destroyed. What do we do to pick the bricks up and put them back together? Get Peter Weissman on it and we'll get it back together. Okay. Yeah. Chronology. So history, that's a malacha. That's in Yirmiyahu. This is not definitely not a history book. This Eicha is not history. We're not going to see a chronology. I don't think we're going to see a chronology. What else?
Desolation.
But Yossi, sorry. I'm going to bring back what Yossi. I'm going to revive what Yossi just said. Not chronology per se, but like the destruction. You'd expect to, from an emotional perspective, to talk about the destruction. The wanton murder of our enemies, of our people. Right? How they didn't take the Beis HaMikdash seriously. They profaned it. You would want to expect, right, to hear about that as well in this Megillah. How do we continue without it? Now that it's gone, it's in flames, right?
So,
how do we serve God without the temple?
They didn't seem to care about the temple when it was there.
You're saying they serve.
What's she doing in Sherry's bedroom?
Yeah,
that's not a question related.
Just went in there.
Well, I think they come in the morning and they play whatever. I don't know.
Okay. Yes. Anything else? Okay. We're gonna write a book one day about all the things I heard on Zoom. Yeah.
It's called Zoom Bloopers.
Zoom Bloopers. Yeah, I like that. Zoom Bloopers. Okay. Okay, let's begin. So the Megillah begins like this. Everyone, please follow on inside. Eicha yashva vadad, ha'ir rabasiam. Ha'isaka amana, rabasi bagoyim, sarati bamedinot, ha'isa lamas. Dr. Ziegler points out that there's two different parts of this pasuk. Each pasuk has three parts to it. Eicha yeshva vadad, ha'ir rabasi am, ha'isa ka'amana. Eicha, how is it that right now it sits in solitude? Or she, article says. What's she? Yerushalayim. How is it that the Yerushalayim is alone? How could it be that Yerushalayim is alone? Ha'ir Rabati Am. It used to be that the city was full of people. It's hustle and bustle, right? From day until night. Ha'isak Almana, and now it's like a widow. It's like her husband has died, and there's nobody to come home to. There's nobody that's coming into the home. Negative, right? What do we folk, right? Nice play on words here. But what's interesting is the Megillah does not begin with what happened in the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. It's not talking about what's happened, how it got to be. No. It's going back and forth, right? It's like flash back and flash forward. I can think of like in a movie, it'd be like a split screen. One screen is going to be nobody's roaming the streets. There's like the in the old westerns. What are they? What's like going through the streets? What?
Ghost town.
It's like a ghost town, right? And then like the screen right next to it is like selling the animals, the nesachim, the yayin, the families coming to the Beis HaMikdash to serve Hashem for vacation, for Pesach. And goes back, Haisaka Almana. Right? So it's interesting to note that we're not talking about right now what happened during the destruction. We're focusing on the before and after, meaning that happened, but the result of this is so catastrophic also.
What year?
What year? I don't know the exact year. What year was it? I'm not so good.
570 was the second. It's about 570 something.
570 BCE. Laminyanam, we would say. Yeah. Now, the next part of the pasuk. Notice what's different about the next part of the pasuk. Rabasi Bagoyim. We begin with, this was amongst all the nations, Jerusalem was like the capital of the whole world. Everybody looked toward Jerusalem as a focus point and a place to visit. Sarati Bamidino, it was treated amongst a princess amongst all the provinces. Haisa Lamas. And now it's become a nothing. And now it's become empty. Right? Whereas in the first part of the pasuk, we focused first on the emptiness, the desolation of the Beis HaMikdash, of Yerushalayim. Here we begin with how amazing it was, right? And we focus on how now it's not taken seriously. Nobody cares about Yerushalayim. It's a nothing. It's a museum piece. No one looks at it, okay? It's cute. It's nice. No one looks at it. That's one part of the pasuk. But there's another focus here on part A and part B in this first part of this first pasuk is there are two ways. This is really reflected in a parish on the Megillah called the Palgei Mayim. The Palgei Mayim was written by Rav Yaakov Melissa. Rav Yaakov of Lisa was one of the Gedolei Hador in the early mid 1800s, 1830s, 1850s, Rav Yaakov Loiberbaum. He was known, he was a giant, like, halachic authority. Him and Rabbi Kiva Eger were the two Gdolei Ador at the time. He wrote a sefer on halacha and Chosha Mishpat called the Nesivos HaMishpat, which he's most famous for, and a parish and a commentary on Yerodea called Chavas Das, which are learned in yeshivas all around the world. He also wrote a sefer on many of the Megillos. He wrote a parish on Megillos Eicha. It's called Palgei Mayim, based on a pasuk in the sefer. And in there, he points this out. He says that there are two ways to attribute kavod to individuals that are like wealthy or, you know, have a lot of means. Either you could focus on the amount that they have, right? This guy is worth, you know, $10 billion. This woman is worth $30 billion, right? Forbes 500. No, they're the top five on this list. Or you could focus not on that, but on the kavod that they receive. Not always that they deserve our kavod, but sometimes you could focus not on the amount that they have, but they respect that they demand that an individual, a powerful, wealthy individual gets is the respect that they get. So there are two aspects here that Yirmiyahu is focusing on. One is the amount of people, the quantity of people that are coming in and out of Jerusalem. That was a tremendous amount of people, right? That's one focus. The second is the kavod that Yerushalayim received, right? That's a different emphasis here. So the first is, right? So you're, Mendy, therefore you're saying we begin with the emptiness because we could quantify the fact that Yerushalayim was full and now It's empty. Nobody's visiting, right? The starkest image that we can see of this is March 2020, right? March 2020. Just New York City, Lahavdil, was full. There's tens of thousands of people on the streets. I was just reading the GWB just went tollless, right? Right. Well, they are tollless. Right. So boothless. Truth is, boothless. Truth is, a woman in our community, Aviva Oppenheim, was the lead woman on that project. On all of these. She's written up in the link about it. Yeah. So it's a great, what is it? The number is like a crazy amount of people travel. It's a world's busiest bridge. The number, what was it? The millions of people every single day? I don't know. That's what they wrote. It was like hard to understand. But back then, right? Unbelievable. And then within a day, 24 hours, maybe 48 hours, empty, desolate. One of the ways that I like took a break during COVID was that I would just drive the highways. I need to get out of the house, right? I called the car my mobile office, and I would just, there's nobody there. It's empty. And then you would look at the Kotel camp, and you see pictures, Yerushalayim. Nobody died. The Kotel, right? Since 1967 until now, Yerushalayim is full, and now it's empty. And that, I remember, Tisha B'Av 2020 was like a very tough, like it was raw. It's like to know we couldn't even get into the country if we wanted to get in. And that people weren't even allowed to walk the streets past a certain amount of meters past their house. You know, I don't know. Netanyahu would zap them. I don't know what happened. But this is what Yirmiyahu is writing about. Right? That Echa Yeshva Vadat. And Yerushalayim itself, the imagery is so powerful that Yerushalayim is real. Yerushalayim is a person. It's the, I think people write, it's the beating heart of the Jewish people is Yerushalayim. And it's a real person. And the imagery of Almana, Haisa Ki Almana, so Rashi points out here, you'll see some of the Mefarshim are very dark. And that's the way they see Eicha. And others see within every single Pasuk an element of hope. That even within this darkness, they see a little bit of hope. So Rashi says here, Haisa, not Almana, not that the husband's wife, the Jewish people, are really out for the count, or that it's referring to God. God is married to Yerushalayim and Hashem is gone. No, like Ki Almana. Rashi says, V'lo Almana Mamish, not really like a widow. Ela ki isha shahalach ba'ala l'medina sayam. It's like a woman whose husband went on a business trip and is gone for a very long time. V'daito lachzor etzla, but eventually he's going to come back home. So Rashi sees within here, even Yirmiyahu is giving us, I think Rabbi Yudim would call it a wink, right? A wink. This is not destruction forever, but it's temporary, right? It's going to come back. Haisa ki almana. Ki almana. So the Palgei Mayim points out here, Rashi, that Yirmiyahu is telling us three things that happened to Yerushalayim at this time. Number one, badad mi yoshveha. People aren't here anymore. The inhabitants are gone. The travelers are gone. The visitors are missing. Yisrael, shenishru ke'almana. The Jewish people, he writes, not Yerushalayim is like a widow, but the Jewish people are like a widow, that Hashem is gone, that the Ruach HaKodesh, the presence of God, is missing from their midst. Ve'al, number three, Eretz Yisrael, shnepach stravosel in asinas mas. That the way that they treat Israel is fundamentally different, right? It becomes a vassal state for many years. It becomes a chip, right? That the foreign nations utilize against Israel, utilize in trade agreements. It's in a very important place in the world, obviously. But you'll see later on in history, it's used as that, and it's not treated with the right amount of honor and respect that it ultimately deserves. So continue with one more pasuk. Bacho tifke balayla. Bacho tifke balayla. She weeps bitterly in the night. V'dim asa alachya. So who's this referring to? She weeps bitterly in the night. Bacho tifke balayla. What? Yerushalayim is crying. V'dim asa alachya. That the tears are fresh. It's continuously crying, right? Usually, a tzara happens, lo aleinu, and then after a certain amount of time, either there's just no more tears left in the arsenal, there's nothing left, or there's an acceptance and you move on. The dimasa alachia refers here that it's continuously fresh. It's sad every single day. The reality of not having the Beis HaMikdash is a destruction, is a chorban every day that we don't have it. Ein la minachem mikol ohaveha. There's nobody that can give her nechama, right? Just imagine, we've been through shivas like this, right? Where it's just so tragic, so terrible. You're going and you're doing your best. You're just showing up. There's absolutely zero you could say to change the reality on the ground. Ein la minachem mikol ohaveha. There's nobody that knows her best, her lovers, that know her best, that could do anything that could change her. No comfort, no nechama.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
So today, it's a little hard to see this, especially how Yerushalayim is built up today.
Great question,
how
good.
How far we're away from this. And every single year, we look for the Mashiach to come, but it's not here yet.
Yeah.
Maybe it looks like he's going to come, but he's still not here. I'm just saying, but it's so hard. It's very hard for a lot of people to get into this.
Right. So I'll make a point now, but I think this is a great point to address. Mendy asked, Yerushalayim is bustling today. How do we understand this? So I will tell you that the Nachem Tefillah, that's a good trivia question. What are they? There are a few different brachas that we only make once a year. Al Bir Chametz is one of them. And so is Nachem. That Rav Gorin changed Nachem. He changed the words of Nachem after 1967. Why? Because it spoke about that it's empty, it's desolate, there's nobody here, there's nothing going on. He says, it's not true. It's not true. So it created waves throughout the entire world. Everybody who had an opinion shared their opinion about the change of Nachem. And Rav Yosef and others said, absolutely not. Can't change it. Rav Salvechik also. Rabbi Salvechik was very against changing any Nusach. That's a Nusach HaTfila. How can you change it? 2,000 years, we have this Nusach HaTfila. So he feels, because it's not on the, today, we don't feel it on the physical level, but it's spiritually true. There's an emptiness there. And even though that is the, right, that's where we feel Hashem's the most, it's not even close to the way it's going to be with the Beis HaMikdash. That's the way he writes. That's the way that the Rav felt it needs to be and needs to stay. That's that. But still, I think that over the past several decades, the mood of Tisha B'Av has changed. It's more, if you look at all the programs that are out there, right? It's a day of chizuk. It becomes a day of inspiration and less of a day of depression, which is an element there. It's good to hold on to sadness. You have to own those feelings that we have. But it has changed a lot in the way that it's become a day, I think, where people are learning more Torah that day and they're learning like on a regular average day, right? It's become very, very different, you know?
You also have another aspect that the world is looking up to Jerusalem.
And Eretz Israel. Right. Things have changed tremendously.
It's completely different. different than it was 50 years ago.
I just finished reading a great book. I'm going to try to get him. A good friend of mine was a chief. Chief what? Rabbi Aryeh Lightstone worked with David Friedman as a chief of staff, Ambassador David Friedman, and he helped broker several of the, almost all of the, peace deals, the Abraham Accords, and he wrote a book about behind the scenes. Just came out 2 weeks ago. Easy read. I read it in literally a week. It's a great book. And we're going to try to get him to come to the shul at some point this year.
What's the name of the book?
Let My People Know. So you see there that they took a completely different approach to peace in the Middle East. Every other person up until now, what they do, because they're outsiders, that's really why it worked. He writes about this. Because they were not in the political system their entire lives. So it used to be, let's address the Palestinian issue. And once we fix that, don't fix it. That's not going to be fixed. They tried. They won't come to the table. So let's broker deals with everybody else first. Everybody else is so, right? The UAE, Saudi Arabia, right? Bahrain. It's unbelievable. Morocco, it's unbelievable what they were able to accomplish. And it happened so, so fast. Because once they knew, the president lost the election, they knew that they had to move even faster to get these things done. Really, really great book to see behind the scenes. We see here, right, that Israel is very respected and people want a piece of Israel and they want to learn from Eretz Israel. What we're doing in Africa to help them with water, it's really, really amazing. Yeah.
Any other president would have received the Nobel Peace Prize?
Two. He writes that in the book also. Whether it's a president or the ambassador, somebody would have, even the heads of whatever, someone would have received something. Correct. 100%.
Friedman should have gotten.
Yeah. 100. Yes, he should have. B'cho tifke b'layla v'dim asal yachya im la menachim mikol ha'vah ko re'eha bagduva. All their friends, not the lovers, their friends, right, rebelled against them, turned their back against them. That's something that we see, right? Because ultimately, right, you can argue that a lot of these deals are not because we're friends, but because it's in our best interest to be friends with Israel. But the second things change, right? Okay, let's see how they vote in the UN. Let's see. Kol re'eha bagduba. Hayula la'oivim, and they become enemies, right? Overnight, things change. Right? That's still true. That was true then. I think there was a peace deal back then with Egypt in times of Yirmiyahu, and that changed. That changed. As you see, Jerusalem, Israel, and the press going down, we defend them, right? Or you throw your cap in the fire and burn them. So, b'cho tifke b'layla, Chazal already here, say something a little bit deeper. They say this refers to the two Bate Mikdash that are destroyed. B'cho tifke, Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni, Balayla refers to Tisha B'Av, that both temples will be destroyed ultimately on Tisha B'Av. That's B'cho tifke. Or B'cho tifke, the Gemara in Tanis says, is that this entire Tisha B'Av day began with crying. It began with the Cheid HaMeraglim. The Meraglim's report, the Jewish people's response was crying. Hashem says, you cried for nothing. I'm going to give you a reason to cry. Bacho, you cried then. Tifke, you'll cry in the future. That's what Chazal say in the Gemara and Brachos. The Dimasal, Lachia Rashi writes, because they're crying always. The Palge Mayim here says something very, very powerful. The Palge Mayim, the Nesivos, writes that Bacho Tifke Balayla is the reason for our gullus. Why? We didn't take Israel seriously. Hashem said, I'm giving you Eretz Israel on a silver platter. And what do we say? No, we don't want it. We want to go back to Egypt. He says that the tears are still fresh. In every generation, we're still rejecting Israel. On some level, we're still rejecting our connection to Israel. Yeah, we're still crying, not over the sadness, that's Rashi, the sadness, the loss of Yerushalayim, We're crying over having Israel and not wanting Israel or what Israel has, right? Yes.
So most of the second base summit issue wasn't really between us and Hashem and Yerushalayim. It was how we interacted with each other, that we had respect each other. We all couldn't get along.
It's Sin Eskin, right? Sin Eskin. Yeah, yeah, right.
So our religiosity for Hashem and for the base summit, I think that was there. No, it was,
right.
It was more of an issue. And yet, the second, for the first base summit issue, was kind of defined. When we were going to come back again. Yet, for the second, it seems to me that it's been undefined and it's been open for a very, very,
see,
very
Sin Eskinim is worse.
It would appear so.
I think it appears so. We have many proofs for this in Chazal. The Meshach Tachman, the Gedei Parshas Noach, points that out also. Why did the people, the Dor HaMabel, ultimately, you know, find their fate with Dor HaMabel? Why did the whole generation get wiped out? Being Adon L'Chaverim. They did also bin al makom issues, right? They had that wasn't when Hashem said lo nechtam gzar dinam ella al gazo ella al chamas.
I read something that said,
yeah,
but we have to really think every single year this word Tisha B'Av that we didn't fix that. This year we could have done something to fix it, and as an individual we did not.
Yeah,
and that's what we have to concentrate on. To be able to get into Tisha B'Av, so we should be able to fix it.
Right. That's our job. That's that's fixable. There's no excuse. I didn't know this mitzvah, I didn't know halacha. Okay, fine. But did you do more to include other people? You know, be nicer, be kinder, not hold that grudge. So he writes, Afdor acharon adayin hayim osim be'eretz chendo baruchu me'akadusha baruchu betumas avodah zarah. He says, even every generation, he writes, is following after, is looks at Israel in a very disgusted way and chooses to veer themselves away from Eretz Israel. Kilu amar shedimas ha-meraglim, it's as if the Pasuk saying, as if the cry, the tears of the meraglim is still on our cheek, fresh, many, many generations later. Right, so challenging us about our love for Eretz Yisrael, right? And how do we ourselves stand up for Eretz Yisrael, in our own lives? Okay, we'll stop here for today, and we'll continue next week with Pasuk Gimel. Wish everybody a great week, a great day.